After graduating from the Warsaw and Leipzig conservatories, Čiurlionis has settled in Vilnius, where he gives piano and music theory lessons. His address is Andrejevo Street, 11, apartment 6. This ad was published in the Vilnius News at the beginning of 1908 and confirmed that Čiurlionis was not just visiting Vilnius but had settled here. The artist's choice to live in Vilnius was a very important event for the nascent Lithuanian movement. Everyone was curious about this highly educated and internationally recognized artist. What impression did Čiurlionis and his work leave on those who saw it at the time? How did the composer's new friends remember his little room on this street? During Čiurlionis' first visit to Vilnius, during preparations for the first exhibition of Lithuanian artists at the Petras Vileišis mansion, Ona Elžbieta Pleirytė Puidienė thus described his appearance in her diary. Čiurlionis' paintings are extraordinary. It's hard to even describe them. I've visited a lot of European museums, but I've never seen anything like this. Čiurlionis himself is also extraordinary. He is one of those people who draw everyone's gaze and forces them to notice him, but at the same time he is constrained by his own unique and enigmatic personality. He is of medium age and height, with a very strong, sharply defined facial profile that isn't very appealing and rather gloomy. But his large eyes, with their deeply penetrating gaze, a calm demeanor with a clear shadow of sadness, and his extraordinary intelligence set him apart from everyone else. This is how the artist Lev Antokolsky, who will later help Čiurlionis with introductions in St. Petersburg, describes his visit. I remember one autumn evening when I visited him in his tiny room on Andrejevo Street, where there was nothing but a piano, a pile of sheet music, and some small dry tree branches hung on the wall, and commented, "He was there all alone with his brilliant ideas, and the sound of his music surprised me with their empathetic sadness that were like the sharp black wings cutting across the air in his painting Longing." The composer Juozas Tallat Kelpša provided more details about Čiurlionis' room. "He invited me, and the next day I went to visit him. The ceiling was low, but the room was spacious. It had a narrow iron bed and a small table with a little chair next to it. His own Lippenberg brand piano had been placed along the other wall. Čiurlionis used to say that his piano was a very good one because it was sturdily constructed and was cheap. It only cost 350 rubles. A pine branch had been nailed on the wall above the piano. Next to the bed there was another one, a few more small chairs and a suitcase containing all of his worldly goods, the manuscripts, a small batch of sheet music on the piano, a camera on the windowsill. Those were the entire furnishings of his room." Čiurlionis often seemed enigmatic and incomprehensible to his friends and the Lithuanian movement, and due to his weak knowledge of the Lithuanian language, he was reserved and somewhat unapproachable. But he was also magnetically attractive and intriguing with his extraordinary spiritual world. Each one of his creative breakthroughs, described by his colleagues, speak volumes about the extraordinary respect they had for his talent and once again confirm what an exceptional person lived in this room from 1907 until 1908. The writer Liudas Gira witnessed one such breakthrough and immortalized the creative atmosphere in his memoirs. "I found him sitting at the piano while his inspired hands played out his spiritual dream, as if he had been imbued with power from the ancient god of thunder, and the keys of the piano were as if bewitched while he tried to express his impalpable longing. He was improvising. I asked him not to stop playing his spirit songs, and I had that one single chance to listen to how geniuses, caught up in the mood of inspiration, create something just for themselves. It was a powerful improvisation worthy of Beethoven. Frenetic chords came up and disappeared, immediately replaced by wilder ones that were even more beautiful. It was as if the sea were being swayed by a great storm, and the melody swayed along with it. The piano cried and wailed like an old woman from Dzukiya, sadly lamenting her only son being buried in the small hill on white sand. And so thunder pealed once again, as if all of the ancient gods had gathered to take revenge for the contempt shown for them, or as if witches were flying in at midnight for a coven at the pine tree where the man had hung himself in the forests of Dzukiya. He finished and started another one. His hands were like lightning, extracting chords from all over the keyboard, giving birth to them in both major and minor keys. Soft piano melodies and loud forte ones swayed like the tops of Dzukiya's pine tree surrounded by wind, slowly at first from afar and then suddenly shaking the whole forest with a great roar. And in that roar of sound I started to hear the peal of our sad and powerful bells that kept steadily increasing, and they pierced my heart so much it was as if the bells were resounding and vibrating right inside it.